Mr. Rogers, Reel 11. Now, did anything else happen while you were out in, you know, at...
Well, we was taken off the, what's called it, the transport after my young brother went home. And, what's called it, they asked us to try and train the chaps that was coming out from UK's National Servicemen. They were jungle fighting. Well, you can only teach them where there is a jungle. So you had to go to into Johor Bahru, and about 3 miles inland, then you come to the jungle of Malaya, or parts of it. And what's called it? Our job was to round up and come in contact with the resistance of Malaya, because they were promised their independence. See? And because they never got it straight away, they have been fighting on our side against the Japs, and we were supplying them with weapons. Now the war was over with the Japs, they were fighting us. See, so we had to go out on patrols.
So you were, it was a sort of training these national servicemen whilst going on patrols?
Yeah.
Against these Malayans?
Malays, yeah.
But do you remember much about those patrols?
Well, one in particular that we learnt earlier on in Burma and Java, some of the women, if they had a baby and it was died, it was a custom that they left that village or wherever they were and took the baby, and the husband was looked on as if there was something wrong with him. And what they did, they used to come along with a baby and Sahib, Chico, Sahib means mister, Chico meaning baby, and they said they'd go make it sick. And because a couple of the patrols at different times went up and she'd pull the grenades and blow herself and the 10-man patrol up. There'd be about 4 grenades in with the baby and her. So one patrol we went on, one came up, and I said, made them stop. And he said, "What for?" I said, "Stop. Don't go anywhere nearer." And I said, "Now stop." And bust. That's Hindustani for stop. And she wouldn't, so I just opened up on her. And because she went down, and the officer, oh dear, he went berserk. So I done no more. Asked him to, I grabbed him by the arm and said, "Will you follow me?" So he came with me, and I cut a big tree down with me Gurkha's cookery, with a big branch, long one, and as I pushed her over, bang, she went up. I said, "That's an old trick." "Oh," he said, "something else I've learned." I said, "Yeah, but you would have learned it the other way, that it would be no good to you." So he said, "Well, you learnt a lot." I said, "We had to learn very, very quick, which you're good to learn to do." But one chap we had in the section, the patrol we was out, he was a chap, every time he fired, he'd poke his head up to see if he shot him. And I said to him, "One of these days someone's going to part your ear." I said, "And if you give us away," I said, "let the enemy know where there is," I said, "I'll shoot you." And the officer said, "You'll be after I've shot him." And he done it once too often, and someone parted his ear for him. And that was the only one we lost in 7 patrols I did with this officer. which it went round that I was mad.
Why?
Because they're all recruits. Even the officers didn't know nothing. And what we were doing, what we were taught to do in Burma and that, was things that come natural. But to them, it was not cricket, let's put it that way.
You hadn't had that much experience in Burma because you'd been on the
But you learn very quick. You learn very, very, very fast. And I mean, things I dare say, or sometimes I'll be watching the television or be reading a book. All of a sudden I start burst out laughing. The wife said to me, "What's the matter? Something's happened there, or something I read in a book, completely forgot about." And at the back of my mind, it's come through. You know. But a lot of this, hundreds and thousands of things that happened that, you know, you never believe, you know, unless you've experienced it.
Now, how long were you out there then? With, you know.
Well, I came.
When did you come back? Yeah, that's another
I came back on the 25th of August 1948.
So you were out in Singapore for nearly 2 years?
Yeah.
Doing those patrols.
Singapore and Malaya.
The MT, and then.
On those things, you know.
Well, had you been looking forward to demobilisation?
Well, I had nothing to come home for. Because my young brother was got married. My oldest brother was married and they got a family. My grandmother that brought us up, she died when I was in Java. See, so I had no immediate family to come home to because my dad, where my father was, I don't know. See, so...
Do you remember anything about the journey back, or was it pretty routine?
Oh, no, it wasn't. It was very funny coming back. Oh, by the way, the name of the ship that brought us from Java to Malaya was called Rio de Pacifico, the Queen of the Pacific. It was a luxury liner. That's what brought us out of Java.
But what brought you back from... What do you remember of the journey back from Singapore?
Well, just to us it was just a troop ship, but the name of it, I couldn't tell you.
And what do you remember of it?
Well, on board a ship, the men in charge of the bodies, or hands as they call them in the Navy, no matter what rank you was, the ship's RSM... outranked everybody, even if you were a major. What he said was law. Well, he tried to get us all organised, but we was what we call time expired, and we couldn't care less. We're coming home. And we never got on very well with him. And on the way home, we stopped at Ceylon. And they would bring a load of female service women out in big cutlers. And they had to come up the ladder. And we was leaning over there, looking at them, coming up. Well, they were just getting out. And the RSM, "You five there," he said, "go down and give them a hand." So I turned around and said, "Not so lightly." "What did you say?" I said. Then they all started, "Not so lightly." They had the cream of the in Singapore, let the officers have them, help them up. And one chap went down. His name was Poojie, well, his real name was Algy Orton. But they called him Poojie because he had used to be a boxer. And his name, his nose was pushed to one side. So he went down, and the first one was a Air Force officer, you know, in the WAFs. And she had one of these big travelling trunks. He picked it up, put it on the back, on his back, started looking at him, and she says, "What's your name?" So we all shouted out, "Just call me Garth." The name stuck to him, even to this day. We get a Christmas card for him every year. Algie, and in brackets, he's got Garth. And as we was coming, you know, we set sail from Ceylon, and coming through the Med, we hit a false Tengao. It was so bad that the big Carly floats was as big as this room. We lost two of those over the side. And that particular day, it was the first time we've tasted pork. All the time we was out there. And of course, we made a pig of ourselves, being Matlows. And of course, there are a lot of them who weren't. They was up. Everything you looked was filled up with sick. And we was up there on deck. It was a beautiful moonlight night. And it's just the finishing of the gal. But it was still a bit choppy. And up come this RSM. And they come out by a door, right where we were leaning on the rail, looking over the side. He really looked green. Really looked green. And we all turn around and says, "Nice evening, RSM." And he looked at us, but he's still got a long way to go. We never saw him no more from that day until we got to Liverpool Docks, where we come from there. And we got a train from the Liverpool. Well, as we came in down the gangplank at Liverpool off the ship, there was an MP there, officer, with half a dozen Lance Corporals, military police, confiscating everything they thought they would like, you know, wanted. Like, to take the swords off you, or if you had a flag, or what's in that bag there, you say, "Well, presents I brought home, confiscate it." And I'm coming down with my samurai sword, lashed to me case. And when I got down, he said, "Take that." I said, "No, you can't." And I brought out a letter signed by Brigadier Sanders saying, "Sure, I mean to have it." He said, "That don't mean a thing." And all of a sudden, an English revolver come past my face. And the voice said, "You touch any of the more of these men's gear, I'll blow your effing head off." When I looked round, it was Major Bostock. And by God, they all went for their revolvers, and all of a sudden you heard click, 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 click. All the men that got off first, that had stuff taken from them, were standing around, had their rifles, so they'd done no more, lifted their rifle bolt up and knocked it down as if they put one up the spout. And you never see six people stop dead in movement. And after that, Major Bostock said, "All men has had anything confiscated, come and take it. And if you take anything that doesn't belong to you, God help you." And they come and collected them. Anybody? Carry on. They went up to this MP officer and he said, "I'm going in there to have a pint." He said, "And if I see you touch one of these men's gear, I'll come back and blow your head off." And of course, we followed this Major Bostock in to have a drink with him, because saving me so my sword. He said, "No, I'll buy him." So we said, "We're in neutral ground here, sir. This is one time we're not going to take any orders." So he said, "All right, if you feel like that." So we bought him with scotch. And he said, "I don't know what I've got this bloody thing with." And he broke it, opened it. wasn't a bloody round in it. There ain't no ammunition in it, so... He said, but it put a fear of Christ up them. He said, but I've never known any men to open their bolt and close their bolt as quick as that. All they just want is one movement. And, of course...
What was the procedure for the demo? Where were you demobilised? How did they do it?
Oh, Ashford in Kent. But we got a train, because we missed one, the troop train, as we should have done. And we got another one, was a couple of the carriages, four was troops. And when I got on there was three or four blokes out of our unit. So with that, as we pulled into Euston Station, I rushed out with this Poogee Orton and run straight into the MPs again. Where's the RTO's office, please, Corporal? Oh, right round there. Where are you? We're the advance party for D-Mob, the Buffs. Oh, good show, good show. There he went. Because we'd done no more. We went to the taxi rank, because I only live, 20 minutes walk from Euston Station. So we tried to get a taxi. None of them, because we had no money. But one bloke, he must have been ex-serviceman, he says, come on, lads. He said, I'll take you. Where do you want to go? I said, Ferdinand Street. So he took us there. So I said, hang on a minute. I said, I'll go and get some money. So I had my grandmother's key with me. How I come to have it, I don't know. It was made of brass. And there's me aunt sitting round the fire. And she's warming herself. Oh, she didn't expect you for another week. So I asked her if she had any money on her, so she'd give me some money. I went out and went to pay the taxi driver. In the meantime, Poogee was outside talking to the taxi driver and giving him a couple of pairs of silk nylons, stockings. Because he insisted that he'd come down and have a drink with us, and he wouldn't take no money. He said, those nylons is going to be worth a lot more than that fare is going to be, would have been. And that's and we stayed, and I phoned up about 10 o'clock, I phoned up Euston Station to find out what the next train from Liverpool was. Then I phoned the RTO's office and told them that we just missed the train. So I said, well, they're billeted in a big hotel, a big block of flats that's been taken over by the Ministry of Defence at the bottom of, between Edgware Road and Baker Street. And that's where he said, you can go. So I said, well, I only live at Chalk Farm. So I said, well, go back there. He said, but you've got to be back there by 9 o'clock tomorrow morning because you go to Canterbury. So I had to go to Canterbury, get all our documentations, and from there we came home, or came by train to Aldershot to get our D-Mob suit. And as we come out, people outside want to buy them off us because we're still in army uniform. And we got these boxes under our arm, and square boxes they were. Everybody knew what they were. We got pulled up by a jeep, four MPs, and what's it called? What do you got now? I said, a D-Mob suit. Why? Show me. I said, pee off. I said, we're civilians now. Don't start something that you can't finish. And I put my hand down on the handle of the samurai sword that was on the long... Oh, I didn't know that. I thought you were just... they didn't want to know. And because Poogee was sitting there and he's got a Japanese Luger in his hand. But then we went our different ways when we got to Euston Station.
Now, what did you need to do for work? Did you go back to the railway?
I went back to the railway, but...
What as? Because you were a van boy, you were in a... But that was
yeah, we went back. So back they, but they wanted to put us back. They put us on what they call horse shunting. Our job was to lead the horses, put empty cart back in the, on the loading bank. When one was loaded, to take it out. Because we got in some of the lorries to move them. And they're telling us how to drive. I said, that's my lot. And I turned it in. And I went back, what's called it, to the building trade. And that's when I started learning plastering and all the fancy Cornish work around there. And
so you became a plasterer, basically?
Pardon?
A plasterer, that was your job, a plasterer.
Well, that was my main job, but because when the Richmond Cornish went out of thing, I had to go to take different courses at different, what's called it, call.
It's all right. Now, what was... What effects had the war had on you, or your war service had on you, either physical or mental, good or bad? I mean, or were you just the same? Do you reckon? What? How did you feel it had all affected you?
Restless. Just restless.
What do you mean by restless?
Well, you know, couldn't settle down to the same job day in and day out. You know, like when... And back the railway, it was shunting these horses and carts about. Couldn't do that.
Did you have nightmares or anything?
I had relapses of malaria. I bought home a load of mepoquins. And I had relapses of that.
I didn't know you'd had it. You had that while you were out there?
I had that out there, yeah.
And what about... did you join any of the regiment, the associations? I mean, I know you're a member of the Normandy Veterans. Well, is there anything else you joined?
Well, we joined. I started to join the Royal British Legion, but they were a cliquey crowd there. You joined it, and you went and sat down, and you get one of some come and say, "That's my seat," and because. I left that branch of the British Legion, joined another one at Swiss Cottage, and bloke come up, "That's my seat," and because I was with me, so I picked the chair up, looked at it, looking around it. I said, "What's your name?" I said, "There's no name on this chair," and Frankie Moore, he was one of the committee members. I said, "Here." He tells me this is his chair. "I didn't know you bought chairs here." So he said, "Oh, he means he normally sits there." I said, "Well, they don't now." So he said, "If you don't move," he said, "I'll move you," without hitting him across the head with a chair, and walked out. And I've never been back to a British Legion as a member since.
Now, you joined the Normandy Veterans, though. What
I joined the Buffs first. I joined the Buffs first, as a London branch of the Buffs Association. Then I joined the RNA, the Royal Naval Association. Then I joined the... I was a founder member of... St Albans branch of the Normandy Veterans. Then they opened, thinking about opening one at Hackney. So I was a founder member of that one at Hackney. And I'm a founder member of the one I'm at now at Finchley.
And what do you think the associations give you? Why do you like them? Why are you proud to be part of them?
Well, we had a laugh and joke. We never talk about the war. Never talk the experience. Oh, what was you in? Oh, I was in the tanks. So-and-so tank, or this and that. But that's all.
Would you meet people you knew in the service associations? I mean, is that why it was important? Because if you're not talking about what happened to you in the past, what's the point of joining them? Do you see what I mean?
Well, the Buffs, for instance, all the time I've belonged to that, I've only met one chap that was in the 2nd Battalion in Burma, but even then I didn't know him. If you understand what I mean? The association were either pre-war buffs or buffs that came in after the war.
So why are these things important? If you don't talk about what the past and you don't know them, what does it give you? Do you see what I mean?
Well, you don't talk about the bad things, let's put it that way.